Corporations were still robust despite paying 23% of all U.S. tax receipts in 1960. By 1990, after many new bond issues and favorable tax provisions, that share slipped to just 9%. Household debt, while large and growing, represented the equivalent of only 50% of GDP in 1960 and 60% in 1980. This was well below the last binge levels at the time of the 1929 crash and its painful aftermath. Householders in the 60s and 70s were still somewhat constrained by memories of the Great Depression, which helped to keep the U.S. savings rate in the healthy 8% range. Even so, economic chronicles count the 60s as a yeasty decade. Credit cards, launched in the 1950s, came of age during the go-go decade, although shenanigans in the rebounding mutual fund industry are what furnished the nickname. Another clue was the attention that William McChesney Martin, that era's Federal Reserve Board chairman, got in 1965 for worrying about the 60s' resemblance to the 20s. The Dow Jones Industrial Average touched 1,000 for the first time in 1966, exciting stockbrokers, and the interaction of individual credit cards, television advertising, and ringing retail cash registers was as phenomenal as the effects of radio pitchmen and the introduction of installment buying in the 1920s. During the 60s alone, consumer debt increased by two-thirds. Mortgage debt, the largest individual ingredient of overall household debt, also ballooned from $208 billion in 1960 to $474 billion in 1970 and $1,465 billion in 1980, as Americans filled in suburbia and carried on to exurbia. State and local governments added their own new debt to the pile, notably for schools and roads. The point of this brief backward glance is to underscore that the 60s, four decades removed from the 20s, laid a vital foundation by reattuning U.S. economic psychologies to consumerism, stock market booms, and borrowing. In short, we must date the great 20th century U.S. debt and credit buildup back to that decade. It has now been 8 decades since the last major rock slide. Nevertheless, the 80s are when debt got out of hand, producing problems that hadn't even been thought of in the Coolidge Hoover era. During the Reagan years, economists began to refer to the twin deficits, the federal budget deficit and the current account deficit. No domestic red ink stained the 20s because Washington ran successive budget surpluses from 1920 to 1930. The national debt had been paid down from $24 billion to $16 billion. Internationally, the United States in the 1920s had a very favorable global payments balance, as befitted both the world's number one creditor and a nation where exports far exceeded imports. When Treasury Secretary Donald T. Reagan observed in 1981 that we're not going back to high-button shoes and celluloid collars, but the president does want to go back to many of the economic incentives that brought about the prosperity of the Coolidge period, fiscal prudence was the precedent he ignored. During Andrew Mellon's long tenure as Secretary of the Treasury, 1921 to 1932, Republican officials and economists pursued debt's reduction, not its expansion. Indeed, Mellon's weakness as the Depression unfolded was magnified by his impolitic statement in 1930 expressing utter lack of sympathy for debtors, farmers, or speculative investors, whose abuses could be liquidated to purge the rottenness out of the system. The Democratic presidential cycle that began in 1933 soon introduced willing use of deficitry and debt craft, reflecting the spend-to-stimulate theories of John Maynard Keynes, whose view had become so widespread by 1970 that Richard Nixon acknowledged that we're all Keynesians now. In fact, the inflation of the 1970s was about to end Keynes's ideological reign. Yet many Republicans besides Nixon remained under partial influence. By the Reagan years, besides encompassing supply-side tax-cut theology and monetarist faith in currency expansion and shrinkage, the ranks of conservative Republicanism included tax-cut Keynesians. Deficits are fine if you're giving money back to the folks who count. Military Keynesians, The Pentagon houses government's most deserving function, pork barrel Keynesians, more roads and projects, and then even more, and even bailout Keynesians. Large or well-connected financial institutions have to be rescued. By the decade's end, as the philosophers of debt usefulness finished lining bookshelves with their paeans to junk bonds, leveraged buyouts, deserving deficits, tax cuts no matter what, and the belief that current account deficits signify only foreign hunger to invest in America, the debt fox was loose in the fiscal henhouse.